Hello, this is Teresa Ayers.
And this is Janet Gallen, welcoming you to Love Letters Live. And as those of you who listen to us regularly know, this is about love letters, personal stories that are compelling and charming and tragic and just whatever makes up life, and then a love letter to follow. Because every experience, if you think about it, has some seed of a love letter. There's someone you can be grateful to. There's someone you can remember. There's somebody who's influenced your life maybe 30 years ago that you have just thought of the other day. Why not pick up a pencil and paper? Pencil, never mind me. Pen, we want it to last forever. And write an I remember you letter, which is one kind of a love letter. So today we have with us Darren Main. And last week Darren was with us, and he was talking about the spiritual journey along the yellow brick road. And Teresa and I became so entranced by everything Darren was saying about this and so involved in our journey down the yellow brick road that we totally lost track of time. And suddenly it was over. So Darren is back to continue that. And let's just pick up where we left off last time, which was, we were about to ask you, who gets your love letter today?
Well, can I just interject? Oh, yes. If you want to listen to that program, please go to our website, www.lovelettersquad.com, and you can search on Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, and that's October 12th that he appeared.
Yes, okay, and so that's last week.
That's last week.
Yes, but for those of you who might not have heard it, yes. Of course. Thank you, Teresa. So the Yellow Brick Road is a kind of a, you say, Darren, why don't you just kind of recap a little bit?
Sure. I wrote the Yellow Brick Road book as a metaphor for life.
Yes.
That we all have watched The Wizard of Oz. Some people have actually read it, those people who still pick up books. And the characters and the places that Dorothy visits are very familiar to us. They're almost like members of our family.
Right.
You know, like it's like going to the family reunion where you got the Wicked Witch and
yes.
the Good Witch
yes.
and, you know, the Scarecrow and, you know, all of that. But they all
characters that speak for different parts of us.
Right.
For
but
sure.
Instead of a family reunion externally, it's like an internal
yes.
family reunion.
Yes.
All the different parts of your own
yes.
psyche that you're sort of visiting with. And as you explore those different parts of your psyche, you can understand yourself better and further your journey, your spiritual journey along the Yellow Brick
Road.
Oh,
sure. The good witch and the bad witch. Which resides in all of us, right?
Right.
We have the evil impulse and the good impulse battling each other all the time.
All the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
In different proportions for different people, but still, it's there, right?
Yeah, it depends okay. on which voice you're going to listen to.
Oh, yes, of course it does. And one of the things we didn't talk about last week was the whole ding-dong, the witch is dead, the wicked witch is dead component of it, which I think you so often hear people kind of singing when somebody is finally out of their life or off their back or no longer a threat in some way, would you say?
Yeah. Well, I think the Winkies, which nobody really knows, unless you're actually a real Wizard of Oz dork like me, you wouldn't know this. But there were the winged monkeys. And
oh, yes.
There were the Winkies, which were actually sort of like munchkins. They
uh-huh.
were sort of a different group of people that lived in the West. And when the Wicked Witch took over, she enslaved them.
Oh, this is in the book?
In the book,
oh,
it goes into
okay.
much more detail.
Okay.
So the OEO guys that march around the castle, those were the Winkies. And they were enslaved by the Wicked Witch, and they had no choice but to do what she told them. And when Dorothy finally liquidated her,
oh.
he threw the water at her,
mm-hmm.
and she melted.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy had that moment of, oh, I'm so sorry. But then they were free. So they represent that part of our mind that the Wicked Witch, or the ego,
yeah.
has enslaved and imprisoned, that has got us sort of trapped in our habits and addictions and
uh-huh.
keeps us enslaved in the witch's castle.
So I have a question. When you just said that, of course, everything you say just ticks, you know, sets off about 40 other thoughts here. But why would Dorothy, do you think, have been sorry momentarily that she was melting the Wicked Witch?
Well, I think she saw the Wicked Witch as their leader.
Oh, so she was being empathetic for...
Yeah, and if you take something like within our own psyche, like addiction,
mm-hmm.
say you're addicted to alcohol,
mm-hmm.
and you finally get sober,
mm-hmm.
what appears to be your worst enemy, alcoholism, mm-hmm. can actually quickly, when you have a spiritual awakening, when you throw water on it, when you shine a light of awareness on it, can become your greatest asset as you find the 12 steps or whatever other recovery program. All of a sudden, you become grateful. And that,
to what set
that
you
addiction,
off on a better path?
That addiction leads you, it becomes your ally. It seems like a curse, and it is until you get sober.
Mm-hmm. And then how is it your ally?
Well, I think it brings us to our knees. It leads us
to our
spiritual path, which for many alcoholics is the 12 steps, some other paths, but most the 12 steps. So very quickly, once she throws the water on the Wicked Witch, the Winkies that are her enemy become her ally and give her the broom and say, hey, thanks, we love you.
Uh-huh. I see. Oh, that's so nice. Okay, so let's go to where we kind of should have been more alert, Teresa and I, last week, and say...
I really can tell time.
I don't know, and does it so well all the time. Who gets your love letter? And, of course, I have one I want to write to one of your people in your life, but who would you like to write to?
I would like to... This is somebody who is no longer here.
Okay.
His name is Arthur Leeper.
And who is that?
He was my sixth grade CCD teacher. And for those of you who are Catholic, CCD is sort of like Catholic Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
Only we had to go on days other than Sunday. We had church more
what
than...
What does that stand for?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
I just flunked CCD.
Okay.
All my Catholic guilt feelings are coming up. But basically, you go, and at each grade, they teach you different things. It used to be taught by the nuns, and now it's taught by more lay people. And Arthur was my teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he came into my life at this point at which I was questioning everything. I was teetering on the edge of finding drugs and all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And as I got into more and more trouble... many people in my life seemingly gave up on me.
Mm-hmm.
My relationship with my parents was just strained, to say the least. But Arthur never gave up. Mm-hmm. And he actually, he was my sponsor when I got my Catholic confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
He taught me public speaking because he was one of the lectors at church. And now I public speak, so he's sort of with me with that. He became sort of like my adopted grandfather in a lot of ways, because I never knew my grandparents.
So he was a significantly older man already.
Yes, he was much older than my parents, so he was more like a grandfather figure.
Mm-hmm.
He was just always, always there for me. He befriended my parents when they were going through their divorce. He was there for my parents. He was very much there for my brother and sister as they got married and had kids. He sort of became a member of the family. He would have Easter and Christmas dinner with my father and his new wife. And he passed away last year while I was in India. And I actually blogged about this. I felt sort of lost because I was somewhere in the middle of India and I couldn't get home to go to the funeral and I couldn't even find a Catholic church, which, about the only time I go to a Catholic church is for a wedding or a funeral now.
Mm-hmm.
But I certainly would have gone just to honor him in some way. But I'm in the middle of India, so there's not like an abundance of Catholic churches. And so I was sitting writing on my laptop on a train in India, and he loved trains.
Oh.
Loved trains. And I didn't even think of this until I was sort of sitting there writing. He taught me how to ride the subway in Boston. He was always taking me on train rides somewhere, around New England. And I just started weeping.
Oh.
And naturally, there's all of these Indians sitting around me looking at this crazy white guy bawling his eyes
Good
out.
Good for you.
But he's just with me in everything I do. And, he's with me when I speak, he's with me when I teach. He helped pay for my yoga teacher training. So
literally
he loaned me the money. I paid him back, but he loaned me the money.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just one of those people that saw something in me that I couldn't see in myself at the time.
Okay, so that's I'd like to know about that, because you said that he never gave up on me, and I wanted to ask, how do you know he never gave up on you? What are the signs that someone is never giving up on you?
He was just always there when I needed him. And whenever I had sort of bad news for the family, bad news, yeah. I'm a drug addict or I'm gay or whatever the news was that was sort of rocking the family,
yeah.
he sort of had this funny little cackle, and he'd be like, I love you no matter what.
Oh, so he'd actually say it.
Oh, yeah,
at tough
all the time.
Okay, that's important.
He's very quirky.
Mm-hmm.
He's very photogenic, too. I've got pictures of him, and when people see pictures, like, is that your grandfather?
Oh.
Sort of had a slanted head and squinty eyes. Looked sort of like Mr. Magoo.
Uh-huh.
Do you think he had other mentees like you, or...?
I think he was close to all the kids he worked with, but mm-hmm. certainly, as far as I know, like, his involvement with my family was pretty unique.
Mm-hmm.
He was pretty special
okay.
to our family.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you also, you said, I think this is so nice to put in a letter, that he saw things in you that you didn't see at the time. Do you know what those things, do you see them now in you?
I think I see a lot of them. He saw somebody that could stand in front of a microphone and speak.
Uh-huh.
And at the time, I was so nervous, I was ready to throw up
uh-huh.
just looking at a microphone. He saw in me somebody that wasn't a pathetic drug addict. He saw somebody that had the potential to be a yoga teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, all the things that I questioned about my life or about my potential
mm-hmm.
or just the potential to be happy, the potential to love.
That's big. Yeah.
Having him in my life, every once in a while we meet somebody that changes the trajectory of your life, that you're going in one direction, and because they saw something in you,
mm-hmm.
you eventually move in a different direction.
Now, was he a priest?
He was not a priest. Oh, he was just.
Did he have a family? Did he?
He had a wife and he had a son
oh,
and
okay.
grand, a couple grandchildren. Mm-hmm. I forget how many, 3 or 4.
And you know where these people are?
Oh yeah.
Oh good.
Yeah, I'm still friendly with them. Not super close,
yeah.
but.
So you haven't lost touch. They're still part of your life in
yeah.
some way.
Yeah, and his wife is still very close with my father and his wife. And.
So if you write this letter to him, where will you send it?
I don't think the post office delivers to heaven.
That's right. We don't think so. Right. So that leaves us that question.
And I don't think God has an email address.
Probably not. Or has all of our email addresses.
I would probably do some sort of ritual and maybe burn it.
Oh,
okay. A little prayer and...
That's one thing to do. But what about the joy of sending it to his wife or his children or his grandchildren? Because that's a part of him they wouldn't know.
That would be a beautiful thing to do.
Wouldn't that? Even to say, you know, dear Arthur, I'm writing this to you, but I'm going to send it to your grandchildren because I want them to know what you are to me.
Yeah.
And in 50 years, some other generation will find it, and they'll always know this little personal
yeah.
part of you. Because you've got a huge body of work in your writings and your teachings, but something personal
yeah.
in your
He's
handwriting.
He's acknowledged in all of my books,
okay,
too.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
But something personal in your handwriting that will last another 400 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Will you do that?
I will do that.
Okay, wonderful. So that's the finish of our last love letters. Thank you. And I want to ask you about your work in India.
Sure.
Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Well,
you referred to those beautiful faces as your kids. I'd like
yeah.
to know about them.
Well, I started going to India 5 or 6 years ago, mostly for myself as a sort of pilgrimage as part of my yoga and meditation practice. And I started visiting schools there, and I just love the children in India. They have nothing. Many of them have no shoes on their feet, and they're malnourished, don't have proper access to medicine or dental care, things that we take for granted, like basic vaccinations and stuff like that. Now, there's kids in India. The India, unlike the United States, where there's a fairly sizable, at least for today, middle class... There's not a huge middle class in India. It's starting to develop, but you're either very wealthy or really, really, really poor. And so I found this school in India that I just fell in love with. It's called the Mother Miracle School. And if I could put a shout out.
How did you find it?
A friend of mine told me about it. And they happen to be located in my favorite city in India, which is Rishikesh. It's up north in the Himalayas. And if anybody's interested, mothermiracle.org is their website. And so every year I bring a group of yoga students to India. And part of our retreat is we go and we volunteer at the school. Because I believe that any spiritual practice is only as good as your ability to bring it into the world. The fact that you can sit in bliss on your meditation cushion is lovely, and I'm happy for you. But unless that translates to you making the world a better place, yeah, it doesn't really matter. So for me, karma yoga, the yoga of action, action in the world, is really what it's all about. So it's a big piece of this retreat. And we go to this school, and I encourage people to sponsor a child. And I raise money for the school every year, and we bought them a big computer lab. Mm. And so the kids have access to email. The school is co-ed, which is really important. So little girls...
Is that unusual for
them? Well, the education for girls is different than for boys, and the expectation for girls in Indian culture is different. You're basically a housewife. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not talking about Delhi or Mumbai. I'm talking about in a smaller village. For a girl to know a trade gives her incredible power, mm-hmm, to make choices about her life. Now, she may choose to be a housewife still,
sure,
but it's her choice.
But she shouldn't do it just because she doesn't know anything else.
If she doesn't know how to read and write, if she doesn't know computer skills or some sort of craft or trade, she's basically got one thing available to her, mm-hmm, being a housewife.
Well, and I guess that if you only have one thing available to you by default, there will be people who take advantage of you.
Oh, exactly.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
as you're saying that, I can see.
And so this school really works with the poorest children in the area.
And they go by day and then go back home at night. It's not like,
yes,
where they
yes,
live.
Yes, it's not like an orphanage. They go home to their parents most of the time. There's some kids that actually live at the school, but, mm-hmm, for the most part, they go home. And they learn computer skills. They learn English, which is essential to making money, like a decent living in India. Mm-hmm. They have, they provide basic medical care. You know, not surgery or anything, but, you know, like vaccinations and physicals and stuff.
So this is a small city or small town, but it doesn't sound
Rishikesh is relatively small.
Uh-huh.
It's nothing like Delhi or Mumbai. It's, uh-huh, it's probably, I'm trying to think, maybe the size of Santa Cruz, California.
Oh, that's big.
For India,
right,
that's not very big.
I see.
I mean, Delhi is massive.
Uh-huh.
And there's different parts of Rishikesh, and this is right in the slums. So these kids, they're just so sweet, so amazing, and so beautiful. And now that they have their computer lab, they can email. So I'm the Facebook buddies with all of them.
Oh, my goodness.
And they send me pictures of their favorite Bollywood stars, none of whom I actually know. But I encourage in November this year, 30 people, which is usually between 20 and 40 people, mm-hmm, to India with me to do yoga. And I encourage them all to sponsor a child.
Mm-hmm. So that means financial help to them.
Basically, they commit to like $30 a month, and that, mm-hmm, helps pay for their schooling, their clothing, medicine.
Mm-hmm.
They get at least one healthy meal a day. But then they become pen pals with this child. And so when they get there, they get to spend time with this child. They get invited to the child's house, mm-hmm, which may consist of, like, a tarp that they sleep under.
Mm-hmm.
The child shows them around Rishikesh, and they get this real, genuinely Indian experience of, as opposed to just going to see the Taj Mahal, mm-hmm, and staying, mm-hmm, in a five-star hotel, they get to understand what life is like for people in India. And to really make a difference.
Well,
and like all good karma yoga, it's all, you think you're helping somebody else, but it's really about lifting your own heart.
Yeah, yourself. So how far does the school go? Like what we would call K-12?
Well, they started with like, Patrick and Shala started with, I think, 5 or 6 kids in their living room, and it was grammar school. Those kids are now the teachers at the school.
So
I mean, they're like high school age, but they're teachers. And they have kids, it's K-12. And then they also have started an evening program so that the parents and young adults in the community can also learn some computer skills, learn English.
They won't be surpassed by their children and left in the dust.
Yeah, and also just lifting everybody up, you know? It's really, really incredible to see.
And they have how many students now?
I think over 500.
So they started with 5.
And they have a wait list. They can't handle all of the kids that want to go to this school.
So tell us about this couple. How did they happen to start doing this?
Well, they both had a different sort of story. Shala had went to India. Both Patrick and Shala had made a fair amount of money during the dot-com era.
Oh.
They had pretty decent careers.
And you say went to India, so they're from
here?
Well,
she went to India. She's Iranian but lives here, or lived here in the Bay Area. Went to India years ago, and at some point she saw some kid picking through the garbage and looking for something to eat, and she just broke down and wept. Mm-hmm. And like all of us, we see something like that opens our hearts. She came home and sort of shoved it to the background and said, I really want to do something about that, and then shoved it in a closet somewhere and didn't do anything for many years, and then decided she wanted to do it. Patrick had been to India a number of times. They'd never met. And Shala had finally decided on selling everything and putting everything in the bank and moving to India, and I don't know what I'm going to do. And her family and friends like, you're crazy.
How
single
heroic.
Woman. And so they said, this guy Patrick we know, he is talking about moving to India to do something. You guys should meet. Well, I met and fell in love. It was like love at first sight. And now they're married and live in India together and have started this school. And rather than have children together, they have 500 children together. And they're so beautiful. It's that saying, the power of one.
And they're on Facebook, Patrick and Shala?
Oh, yes. And you can email them. They're very responsive if you email them through their website, again, mothermiracle.org.
Oh, okay. So we'll do that.
And you can see pictures of the kids.
I'm
you can
do
pick
that.
A kid to sponsor. We'll, it's the most rewarding, amazing thing.
We'll put the link up on our,
yes.
on our website.
Yes.
But I'll be doing a big fundraiser. I do it every year, and I get local businesses to donate gift certificates to restaurants and free yoga classes at local yoga studios, stuff like that. And then I raffle off signed copies of my books.
So where is the – it's an event? You actually have an event?
I just make an announcement at all my yoga classes,
and
we raised something like $10,000 last year. And it all went directly to the school to buy the computer lab.
So if anybody out there has something to offer – to put in the raffle, you'd like to hear from them?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Or if you, whether it's with me or just, you know, you can contact them if you want to go work at school, especially if you have a skill. Mm-hmm. If you're a doctor or nurse, if you're in education or just have... We had a guy go last year who's a sign language interpreter, and he taught the kids basic sign language, which was important because in India there's not a lot of... not a lot of services for people with disabilities of any kind. They don't have wheelchair ramps. You see people sort of dragging themselves to the dirt a lot. And so they have no concept of sign language. If you're born deaf or blind or something
language,
like that.
Is that American sign that's used internationally?
He was teaching American Sign Language, but they don't know any,
right,
any version of sign language.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids picked it up so quick, but it also gave them an awareness that just because somebody is different, that they have, well, I don't even like the word disability. It's just, you know, loss of a sense.
Mm-hmm.
That they can communicate and they can reach out. And it just, you can see the lights going on in their eyes because they're such compassionate, beautiful children.
And you're bringing some of them here?
The children here?
Uh-huh. Are you bringing them here?
No, I don't. But two of them did come one year with Patrick and Shala. Somebody offered a scholarship.
So do Patrick and Shala go back and forth?
They do. They come here every summer.
Oh, they do.
And they do fundraising events in here, L.A., and New York.
Okay. So if people, again, want to know about this.
Maybe you can have them on your show.
I would love that.
They're truly, truly amazing.
Okay. Do they deserve a love letter?
I'm going to write to the one. That's why I want to know if they're on Facebook. They're going to get one from me today. Okay. Thank you for letting us know about this whole world.
Yeah.
Did you want to ask anything about, because you look like you're thinking about something.
No. I have always have many questions, but this time I don't. You're answering them very well.
So if you were, just to round this off, if you were to write another love letter today based on this experience, what would it be? That's kind of unfair to have you do two
really
in one.
I don't know how I would phrase this or even how I would send this letter, but I have a picture in my bedroom. I was at a different school other than Mother Miracle. This was years ago in India, and there were kids there who all the kids they're so poor that, you know, the digital cameras, like, they don't even care about the picture. They just love seeing their face pop up on the screen, and they were showing us how to dance Bollywood and stuff like that, and it was really fun. But there was this, all the kids sort of wanted to play and everything, and there was this one little kid sitting in the corner. And I went over to him, and I said, "You don't want to dance with the other kids?" And he just sort of shook his head, and I said, "Well, what do you want to do?" And he just sort of leapt like a flying reindeer into my arms. And I just held him for like 2 hours. And even when they were serving lunch, I'm like, "Do you want to go get lunch?"
He just clung to you?
Held tighter.
My goodness.
It was just the sweetest thing I've ever
seen.
How old
is this child?
He was probably 4 at the time, maybe 5. He was very young.
And now he would be, what, like 9 or 10?
Probably about 9.
And you know where he is?
I know he's in Rishikesh, I assume, but I wouldn't know how to contact him.
Okay, so you know what, if you ever did, I mean, it's a nice thought for a letter. If you ever did want to write a letter to him and say you've been thinking about him and you remember the time that...
Yeah, I'd love to send him the picture.
And to send him a picture, and he'll have that forever.
Yeah.
Well, that's something to think about. And that's you know, a hard issue when you have in you to write a love letter to somebody you can't contact. But
well,
it shouldn't prevent us from writing the letter.
For me, it's... There's a saying, and it's from Schindler's List from the Jewish tradition, to save one life is to save the world entire. And so for me, he just represents all of these kids in India that need something.
Sure.
Or not just in India, here in America, or not just children.
I would.
You know, you can, anybody in need. There's so many people that want to leap into your arms and get a real genuine hug.
Talk about metaphors for
living. And he just represents the one who was courageous enough to do it.
Oh, you know what? I would write that letter and say just that. I would put it, do you know his name?
No.
Okay, I would put it in an envelope with that picture and just put it aside. Have it ready to go. And you just never know where life takes you.
Yeah.
So, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming back and back.
Yes.
I will come back anytime you
Thank
want.
Thank you. I just love listening to you.
Exactly.
My whiny, nasally voice doesn't annoy you?
And the adorable face that goes with it. No. I didn't think of it as nasally.
No, not at all. So, Darren, thank you again. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please join us every week at this time when we have fabulous guests every single week, sometimes more than one guest at a time. And check out our website. Please go listen to Darren's previous session. And while we have the chance, we just encourage you always to put your loving thoughts into words and send them.
Yes, and if you'd like help in writing and crafting your own love letters and would like to schedule a workshop, let us know and we'll come to you.
That's exactly right.
And if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion. So for now, goodbye.
Bye-bye.